Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. It's time for TWiT Photo with Leo Laporte and Catherine Hall. Episode 31, recorded November 1st, 2011. Derek's Story. TWiT Photo is brought to you by Ford, featuring voice-activated Sync AppLink. Now you can control select smartphone apps with your voice, so you keep your hands on the wheel and your eyes on the road. Check it out on the 2012 Ford Fiesta and at Ford.com/technology. And by Netflix. Watch thousands of TV episodes and movies on your PC, Mac, iPad, iPhone, or TV instantly. All streamed directly to you, saving you time, money, and hassle. For your free 30-day trial, go to Netflix.com/TWiT. TWiT Photo, the show that I think, at least as my goal, inspires everybody, all of us, to be better photographers. Now, I should say, Catherine is out of the studio today. She's not with us. What is Catherine doing, Tony? She's on vacation? She's doing something.
No, she's back from where I just came from.
Which was?
In Photo Plus.
PDN.
Yeah, PPE.
PPE.
Yes.
Is Derek Story, the wonderful Derek Story.
Yes.
So not only filling in, this is fun, not only filling in for Catherine as host, he's also going to be our guest. So he's going to interview himself today.
Yes, I am. I'm going to ask in-depth questions and then give very superficial answers.
Derek's next website. That's what we all do, right?
Yeah.
Derek's website is The Digital Story, New Tools for the Creative Mind. He does a podcast there, digital photography podcast, yes, every week. He's got photo tips. You know, Derek's one of my favorite photographers. Have known him for years. He's a legend in the industry, and also one of the sweetest guys around. So I'm so glad to have you on the show.
Oh, that's so sweet. Thank you.
And one of the reasons is you wrote the Digital Photography Companion.
I did.
Which is right here.
I did.
This is a handbook for people getting into digital photography for the first time. And it's kind of everything you need to know about digital photography.
Yes.
Particularly aimed at people, maybe movie from film, or who just have never used digital cameras before.
Or really never had a chance to learn the basics of photography. Because, you know, technology does that, right? It sort of drops us in the middle of things.
Right.
Just sort of, here we are.
Our conversation already in progress. Yeah.
Yeah, here we
well,
are.
And so that's a really good point, because I think even this show does that. Where we assume you know what depth of field is,
yes,
what focal planes are, what f-stops are, what aperture priority and shutter priority are, and and in some ways I don't want to talk about that so much on the show, because for one thing, you get Derek's book, you learn it, you're done, you know the terms, then it's all about the art. It's really about creating images and telling stories.
It is. You know, I sort of compare it to learning a stick shift.
Right.
Because when you're first learning to drive with a stick shift, you're thinking about everything. I'm pushing my foot in. Actually, I should be pushing this foot in.
You're thinking which foot.
I'm doing the thing here and all this, and I'm not really having the driving experience. And that's the way photography can be when you haven't really bonded with your camera.
Right.
Now, once you do that, like, as you're saying here, then suddenly it becomes an extension of your vision. And then you do what I call falling into the zone. Mm. And you know how it is when you're walking, suddenly you start seeing things that you wouldn't have seen before.
So do you have a prescription for how people could get to that point where their camera gets out of the way?
Well, you have to start by learning your camera.
Read the manual.
You do have to read the manual. Now, the way that I like to do it is the manual isn't something that you read from front to back.
Right.
You set yourself goals. You learn tasks.
Right.
So, for instance, I am going to learn color balance today. I'm going to learn how to control the color on my camera. So I have to first learn what to look for on my camera.
Where
that is, right? And so that's going to be, let's say, the white balance setting.
And that you might use the manual to find.
Then that's what you need the manual for.
Right.
So you got to find, okay, where is the white balance? So you find where it is. Then you learn how.
Right.
Then you learn how to use it, and
right,
then you practice. You look at your shots. You practice and do that. So you knock off a few of those things that you need to know early on.
You're saying it's an iterative process.
It is.
So that's why reading the manual end to end. I mean, you could do. I do the same thing with computer software. Mm-hmm. You might try that, but normally what you do is you start using it and then have questions come up, and then the manual's there for
them. It is. It is. And in all honesty, I think photography is one of those things. It's a lifelong thing. I Catherine will probably tell you the same thing. Most of the guests that you have on the show, I'm better now than I was a year ago.
God, you'd hope so, right?
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
Ooh. If you weren't getting better.
If you saw that stuff
last
from
last year, you were so... No. No. But seriously, in anything, if you got stagnant and you weren't making progress, it might be time to move to a different art form.
That's true. And I think that's part of the appeal of photography.
You can never get there.
It's your whole life.
You never get there.
It's your whole life.
How did you get started?
Oh, it's a great story, actually. It's a story that... So I was a kid in junior high, and I had a friend whose dad was publisher of a newspaper. And I liked hanging around with him because he had fancy cameras, he had a dark room, he had a swimming pool. It was good times. We were in the middle of this heat wave in Southern California. It's a nasty heat wave. And so we were all over at the pool. And I went upstairs. I had this horrible camera. It was an Argus C3. And I went upstairs and I took some shots of kids playing in the water. Afterwards, we developed it in the dark room. We had it hanging up.
Black and white or color?
Black and white. Tri-X.
Kodak Tri-X was a great film.
Beautiful.
Here's a picture of the Argus C3. This will bring back. This will bring back a memory.
Look at that baby.
Look at this here. Look at that. Whoops. This stupid Chrome has a new thing that is driving me crazy. There we go.
It was given to me. Someone had it for a long time. They gave it to me.
You know, if you had that today, you could probably sell it for $1,000. I swear to God, that thing, look at this.
It was a move up for me from my Brownie. So I went from a Brownie Starmite to the Argus C3.
Now, this is what they call a range finder.
Yes.
So you're not looking through the lens.
I got to tell you, though, Leo, mine looked better than that.
This was kind of beat up.
That must be like the first one
really
ever made
clunky.
Or something.
Look at that.
Yeah, but it still had all the gears and all that sort of stuff. So we developed a film. We had it hanging up in there, and then we did our favorite activity, which was raid the kitchen. So we're raiding the kitchen while the film's drying, and Dad comes home, and he comes out of the dark room, and he's holding this strip of film, my strip of film, and he's going, "Who shot this?" Well, as a junior high kid, the first thing you're thinking is that you're in trouble, right? That you're in big mess. And so I said, I did. And he goes, there's a couple shots on here that I really like.
Oh.
I want to run a story on the heat wave. Can I use one of your shots on the cover? And I said, absolutely. Publisher of a local newspaper. And then after that, he hired me as a stringer. And I've never looked back.
Old were you, 16?
14.
14.
14 years old. That's when I started.
And do you still have those shots?
I do. I do. I still have. I have the newspaper clipping. Actually,
that got you started.
That got me started.
How many photographers can say that the picture I took that got me started?
Yeah,
at the age of 14.
That was it. That was it.
Were they good? Do you look back on them and say that's not a bad shot?
It's funny. Sometimes it wasn't a bad shot. Sometimes I look back on those shots and I go, man, maybe I'm getting worse.
Well, that's wow. So this is a lifelong passion for you.
Oh yes, absolutely.
And did you then go to school and study it, or how did you get better? How did you learn?
Well, I hung around. This was heaven as a kid.
Oh, man. First of all, you're making money, not throwing a newspaper, but actually taking pictures that go in the newspaper.
And you had access to the newspaper office. So
I was
in there hanging around with the guys. So I learned a lot of my photography from newspaper photographers. And
photojournalists.
And I tell you, in those days, it was a lot of what we used to hear with the whiskey bottle and the desk drawer and the coffee cup.
Let me show you. You never had his business weeks.
Well, were you 40 feet away when you took a shot? Move your feet.
Here's a dime, kid. Call your mom. You're never going to be a photographer.
All right. Good.
Exactly.
Good.
So, and then I did study in school also. Although I actually graduated English major, design minor.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did you ever go to a photography school particularly, or it was just classes?
Just classes.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. I mean, all the schools I went to, there's always a photography department.
Now, when did you make the transition from film to digital, and how was that for you?
It was, it was funny. I was thinking about this the other day because... I did it right around 99, 2000.
Well, that's early.
Early, very early.
I mean, that was, they were talking, these were 640 by 480 pictures.
Probably. Oh, it was horrible. The very first one was that Kodak was a DC20 or whatever, that little... It didn't even have an LCD on the back, and it was super low res.
And you could get 25 pictures. And
exactly.
In fact, the first one you had to send it in to get it to get the pictures pulled off.
Then I probably had the second one then. But I jumped into it. I mean, I was shooting film for my clients for weddings and all that stuff, but I jumped into it both feet on my personal stuff.
Yeah.
And it's funny, as I look back now, I have this sort of this gap in my high-end photography from the end of film to me to where digital really got good.
Right.
So something like between 2000 and 2003, I have all kind of like a lot of low-res stuff.
Right. That are probably not useful.
Not really.
Yeah.
I mean, they're okay for web, but nothing beyond that.
Right.
And so I made the transition. I jumped in with both feet. I loved it because I was a computer geek anyway, right, on top of everything else. But
that's interesting.
I did pay a price for that.
What was the price?
Well, the price is 3 years of low-res images.
you know, it's funny because I resisted, and I'm not a pro, and you were a pro already by this time, but I resisted for a long time digital until about 2002 or three, when it was 3 megapixels, because I just really didn't like those images. I thought they were ugly. It was too hard to use.
Right.
I remember Apple had the Quick Cam.
Yeah.
That was just kind of like this. It was ungainly.
Yeah. So I have a Quick Take. I still have a Quick Take in my, I have my little museum.
Yeah.
And I have a Quick Take in my museum.
Yeah. But by now, there are very few photographers who would say, oh, I still have to shoot film. It's still superior. Maybe if you use a large format.
It's, you know what it is? It's different. Film is different, and it provides a different look, and especially when you go to print, I think.
Yeah.
It gives you a little something
different. Do you shoot film at all anymore?
I have. I have my Hasselblad 500C still, and a couple of lenses.
Classic.
Oh, it's a beautiful. I love the camera.
It's a work of art. The camera itself is.
I just like to do the wine thing.
The crank.
Yeah, and all that. And then I have a few Contax film bodies that I really like with those Zeiss lenses. So I break them out and shoot film occasionally. But I am a digital guy. I mean, I love digital.
Is that you in this picture?
No, that's Robert Beck, actually, Sports Illustrated photographer. One of the things I like to do is I love shooting other photographers.
Me too.
They're infinitely fascinating to me. And I was hanging out with him that evening. He actually came out to visit my friends at LowPro, and We went and shot a high school football game.
So everybody else take pictures of the game, and you're taking pictures.
I'm taking pictures of Beck. Oh yeah, I mean that. I ran that shot on the LowPro Facebook page, and quite the conversation about the 600 millimeter lens and what kind of Nikon that is, and the whole deal.
Right.
Yeah, it was good stuff.
But even if you're not a photographer looking at this picture, especially because you made it black and white, it's about shapes, highlights, colors. The blacks.
And that depth of field thing that we were talking about before we got started, you know, I love shallow depth of field.
So I'm going to ask you about the Lytro as long as we're talking about it.
Sure.
But just so people who are looking at this and so we understand the terms, the photographer, of course, is in crisp focus, but the background is blurred out. You kind of know it's a football game.
Right.
So it's just enough information.
Just enough. Exactly. That's what I was shooting for, Leo, actually.
But that's called the depth of field. In this case, a shallow depth of field, because if you had a lot of depth, everything would be in focus. And in a point-and-shoot, that's usually what you get, is everything is in focus.
Well, that's one of the problems with point-and-shoots. I mean, I love, we all carry our point-and-shoots. And, now I also carry the iPhone 4S. That's a great point-and-shoot. But when I really want to work the shot, I need something where I can control that depth a little bit more.
Right. In fact, when you see a photo like this or a portrait of somebody like with a kind of blurred background, it screams professional. It's like, oh, this person has a good camera and knows what they're doing. And it may not even be a great image.
Yeah. Well, I think part of the allure of when you work with the depth of field is that I always say, make it easy on the viewer.
It
tells them where to look. That's exactly it. Make it easy for them. So they start out, they know where to start, and then they can kind of explore the other stuff later on.
Right. This is a great. Is that China? This is a great.
Yeah, it's
picture.
China. Yeah,
love that.
Yeah,
love
this
that.
Is the bikes in China, and then we have our San Francisco version, right?
Now, this is an example where you wanted broad depth of field because you want to get all of the – you can see all the details in all the riders.
Yes, you do.
But that's a creative choice. Some people might have said, I'm gonna use a shallower depth of field and focus on one rider.
Yeah, I went a little deeper on this one. I wanted that feeling. This is one of those shots that I think we're going to look back on 20 years from now and going,
What was going on? What were we thinking?
We were a bunch of crazy kids, weren't we?
I want to show the Lytro camera video that we shot. Jeff and Tony were at the Lytro company's facility.
The camera comes in three colors.
You can cut the sound, actually, Tony, because we'll just look at the camera. This is getting a lot of attention lately. It looks like it's a kaleidoscope, but what it is a light field camera that manages to take a picture with very shallow depth of field, but you get to pick what's in focus. So it's selective focus. But you don't have to choose till later.
Yeah, you get to pick and post.
In fact, if you use the special player when you're putting it on a Facebook page or a, I guess Flickr doesn't support it. Most pages don't, but on your website, you can use a special embedded plug-in player, and the viewer can choose what's in focus. You can select what's in focus.
Now, that part's kind of interesting to me.
It does require that special player.
Yeah, but I mean, that's kind of interesting to me.
Yeah. Well, we can do it. If I go to the... Yeah. Lytro website. I'll show you. We can actually zoom. As somebody in the chat room is saying, it's a fix in post camera. But I have to say, at first, when I first heard about it, I thought, this is cool. This is great. This is the future of photography. Mm. But as I thought of it, and as I look at this camera, I'm sure we're making some sacrifices in resolution to do that. And I just have the feeling that this is more of a gimmick than something I would want to buy, especially at $300.
Well, okay, so let's go back to, because we were talking about early digital photography, right? So let's go back to my first little Kodak DC20 at the beginning of digital photography,
right.
And it was kind of a lot like this, right?
Clunky and
funny, you know,
looking,
and you know, a lot of the same sort of discussion where people are going,
hey, it's a gimmick.
Oh my gosh, what fool's going to give up his film for something like this?
Right.
So I think it's early to tell. I think what it does do, it moves a big chunk of the creative process, though, from capture to post, and. So
the butterfly's out of focus.
Right.
The background is in focus. I click on the butterfly now.
And now it is.
Now, that's a nice effect when it's happening.
Yeah.
It's like you're pulling focus.
Yeah. But you see, what they're showing here is to... I mean, this is a fix, right? I mean, I don't think anyone would ever want your foreground subject to be that out of focus because it just drives you nuts.
But I don't think...
It makes your eyes hurt.
They're not... Well, so, in other words, this is the right way to expose this picture, not this, for instance.
Correct, unless you're making some sort of artistic statement, but then you better be good.
And you're not using a Lytro.
You better
not.
No
likelihood.
Yeah, yeah.
So in other words, any photographer who knows how to use his camera can make these choices. Now, this is a good example where you might want to focus on the waves,
yes,
which tells one story, or focus on the surfer.
Yeah, you have an option on this one.
Right,
That's kind of... But again,
neither of us have played with one or have one.
No.
So this is based solely on this kind of information. But it just seems gimmicky to me.
We're just talking out of our lens cap here. I mean, you know.
I mean, this is a good example. You would never take this picture with a spider in focus.
No, not even.
It's just not interesting.
It's irritating,
right.
Isn't it?
And that's the
right.
That's the right shot.
Right.
So in that case, it is a fix in post. You made a mistake, or you just actually with this camera, you don't have to think about it. You just shoot it, and then you decide later.
I think the thing as a photographer that I look at is obviously I have the cameras I depend on, and then there are new technology coming along. So it might be something that at some point, not now, that you have in the bag, and for a certain situation, you know, you pull it out and you play with it.
That's what Alex Lindsay was saying, actually, earlier on MacBreak Weekly. He felt like, well, yeah, this is a technology demo, that ultimately this would be in your high-end Canon 5D Mark VIII, and this and also auto. Right now, white balance is irrelevant, right? Because if you shoot raw, you choose the white balance after the fact. What if depth of field were chosen after the fact?
Yeah, it could be in that same sort of category. Now, even though white balance, if you're shooting raw, can be corrected in post. I still try to get it right at capture.
Oh, do you?
I do. I actually do.
And why is that?
Because there's a couple reasons. One, when I'm shooting people shots, and you know we have a bunch of people shots.
Let me pull some up here.
Portraits. Go into portraits.
Portraits
maybe.
Is even better. Right?
Yeah. So when I'm shooting people shots, I think one of the big deals is that when you're first working with a person, whether it's a professional or someone that you're just doing a portrait of, to bond, to create that rapport that really allows you to pull stuff out, I show images on the back of the camera.
Ah, so in that case, you do want
to. So when I turn the back of that camera around to show the person, I want that image to look good. And
right.
Because then suddenly they go, hey, this guy knows what he's doing. They relax a little bit, and off they go.
Well, that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the other thing is one less thing to do in post.
Right.
So,
right.
And I'll have to tell you, when you asked me about school and all that. So I didn't study commercial photography in school. What I did instead is I apprenticed. I worked with a commercial photographer. Yeah,
yeah,
that was fantastic. Had a great time doing that. And he had the one thing that I was very envious of, that when he brought a box of slides back from the lab and he spread them out on the table, I was amazed because the slides were beautiful. I mean, it wasn't a checkerboard.
They all looked good.
They were all good. Yeah. All the exposure was good. Everything was good. Now, some shots ended up being better than others. But I was impressed by that. And I think early in my 20s, I made it a goal that I want my shots to look as good as possible in the camera.
I think that a number of our guests on the show have said the same thing, that mm-hmm. the less they have to do post, the happier they are.
Yes, yes. Well, I mean, I think in a way it's a badge of honor. It makes you feel like a photographer, a craftsman.
Right. Right.
And on the other hand, it's very freeing because sometimes, post doesn't happen till
it takes a long time.
Till 1 in the morning or so, and I'm tired, I want to go to sleep, I'm cranky. And
this is great.
Yeah, so that was in Iceland, that shot there.
You went with Mikkel Olland to the first Lightroom adventure.
I did.
Which was in Iceland.
I did.
That must have been amazing.
It was. There was 12 of us on that, and it was really something else. That's Japan. That was interesting. You know, I was up on one of those things where you have an overview of the city, just hanging out, shooting some shots, and heard the elevator doors open. I heard all these little kid voices. And I go, oh, my gosh, this is going to be something. So what I did was I found a place, and I sat down on the ground, and I just kind of hung out there. And I let them come to me.
Oh.
And then I found one that would let me take his photo, and as soon as we started going with one,
everyone
come. The teachers came by, and I said, "Is this okay?" Kind of made one of these things. I said, "Oh yeah, it's fine."
I
just had it was just a wonderful 45 minutes of just shooting these beautiful, colorful kids. It was
one
fantastic
thing I noticed about great photographers: you were very patient there. You sat down mm-hmm. and let them come to you.
Yeah,
great photographers often seem to be very patient. Either mm-hmm. in waiting for the light to be just right,
mm-hmm.
waiting to spend time. Did you have to learn that kind of patience?
You do, and you have to remind yourself to be patient at times, too. And this is not a good family activity, Leo. I have to tell you right now.
My kids hate it.
Yeah. So there's two types of photography. There's with family and without.
Yeah.
And so
kids want to move on.
They want to move. So when I'm hanging out with family and friends, I shoot differently. I shoot more from the hip. I'm quicker.
Yeah.
I'm more kind of like a street photography sort of thing.
Right.
When I know I want to do a certain type of shooting that requires patience, I have to go by myself.
Yeah.
Because it just drives other people crazy.
Longest car ride I ever took in Tasmania on the Lightroom Adventure.
Oh, now you are in the second one.
Yeah, I was in the second one.
Yes.
And there were three photographers. It was Bruce Dale. It was me from Adobe. Winston was with us.
Oh, right.
I can't remember his last name. And then there was one other photographer. And every 5 feet. Oh, stop. We got to take Winston Hedricks.
Yes.
He always wanted to take a picture of cows. If there's cows, we're stopping.
Yeah.
And so you never want to try to get anywhere with photographers because they're going to stop every 5 feet and take a picture. But that's okay because that's what we were there for.
But that's the way it is.
But had we been in a hurry, I would have been extremely frustrated.
No, my gosh. Or, you know, if it's your better half in the other seat that's not going to happen.
No tolerance. No tolerance for that. You travel a lot?
I do.
For your photography, is that part of it, or is it just that you like to travel?
No, my world is photography and things related to it. But I speak a lot. I write. I'm an evangelist. I'm a photography evangelist.
Who do you evangelize for?
For LowPro.
LowPro, the bags. I love my LowPro. Bag that I swing around. Yeah. What is that called, where they swing it around? And it's
slingshot.
Slingshot. Love that bag.
That's a slingshot. Yeah, absolutely.
That is my go-to bag. It only holds a few lenses, but if I've got the body and the couple of lenses I want, I can go out in the field. In fact, a sports photographer probably find it very useful because you're out there and you're ready and you don't miss a shot because of that. You shoot Canon?
I shoot Canon.
5D?
5D Mark II, most of the time. That's why I'm jonesing for the 3 to come out.
We're all waiting.
Things getting a little long in the tooth, but the image quality is fantastic.
And this, I'm guessing, is a 70 to 200?
A 300 or...
300.
Yeah, usually a 300 or a 70-200 with a 1.4 a lot of times.
With a doubler,
just a 1.4.
Not doubler, but whatever.
Yeah,
extender, I guess.
Yeah, 1.4. You only lose one stop of light. So if you have... if I get too jargony...
No. In fact, I use that setup. I like that setup because you do get longer.
Yeah.
Because the extent, it's a little, it maybe does it soften a little bit and you lose some light.
Yeah. You lose one stop of light, but it's a F2.8 lens anyway. So I'm at F4 if I'm in light. But I love that rig because if I don't want to carry the big heavier lenses, I can carry the 70 to 200 and the 1.4.
You still look like you're on a spy mission.
Yeah, well, you know what makes it is that lens hood. That lens,
that really does.
You put that lens, you got another 4 or 5 inches.
Yeah,
and you got a little diameter on that thing. So yeah, I mean, if you want to look like a pro, you got to spend the money on those lens hoods.
These are sports shots. So tell me about what you do differently when you're out there shooting sports. First of all, I guess you have to have a pretty fast shot.
Well, let's stop. Can we stop on this one for a second?
Yeah,
this is a good
great
one.
Shot.
This is a fun shot, and this is a lot of what I try to do. So this was at the U.S., part of the U.S. Women's Open circuit, and they make a stop every year at Stanford in Palo Alto.
Right.
And so I was actually shooting for Olympus on this one. So you're down. I don't know if you've ever seen tennis, but you're down. You got a little bench, all the photographers, and you got to stay put while play is. So you get your spot, and that's it, right? And you're all down there. And, of course, you get into the whole big lens thing like we're talking about. So, you know, if your lens isn't the biggest there, you know, right away, or some guy's whipping off, 20 frames a second, then there's a pecking order established.
Humiliating.
Yeah. So, but one thing that they do is that a mob mentality does tend to develop on these sort of things.
Sure.
So they're all following. I was watching her, and she was having a rough match, and I was saying to myself, you know what? She's going to blow. I know she's going to blow because the frustration.
Right.
She wasn't getting the calls, had some unforced errors. So everyone was putting their cameras down when the ball stopped. I was keeping my camera on her, and sure enough, she hit one a little bit long, and she let out, you can tell from just this picture, she let out this yell that you could probably hear all the way to Cupertino. And I was the only one, there was only one click on the shot, and I was the only one that got it.
That's the pecking order.
Yeah. So, I think the pecking order changed a little bit there.
All of a sudden, everybody's
that
Derek.
But so my tip there is with sports, yes, follow the action, do all that sort of stuff that you want. But there is a lot of very interesting stuff that happens around the game itself. And be on the lookout for that.
We don't talk about this enough, but there is an intellectual component to great photography. And this is a perfect example.
Mm-hmm.
You used your head here.
Mm-hmm.
You were thinking about this. So we talk a lot about pre-visualization, where you kind of think in your head about the picture you want. But this is a different kind of pre-visualization.
Mm-hmm.
This is, let's think about what's going to happen next in this match and where I want my camera to be pointed.
Yes, and wildlife photographers are very good at this. They learn the animal that they're going to photograph. They learn its habits inside and out, and this patience thing that you're talking about, and it puts them in position to anticipate a great shot.
We have on the wall over there Scott Bourne's cranes in the fire mist, a very beautiful picture that Scott talks about.
Mm-hmm.
He literally pre-visualized that picture for years,
going
back to the same spot. Every year after year, because he knew that shot would happen someday.
I'll get that
and
shot.
And so that's patience,
yes,
determination, persistence, but also some brains.
Yes.
Thinking about what you're taking pictures
yes.
of and what you're going for.
Yeah. I mean, I think good photographers are students of life and students of nature and behavior and all that sort of stuff.
I like
yes.
that. Yeah. We're talking with Derek Story. The digitalstory.com is his website. Really good place to go for teaching and learning. This is from Iceland, isn't it?
Yeah. I brought that one up because I knew we were going to have it on the show today, and that post is actually about being on the show. So
we'll talk about this.
This is one I haven't published before, so I thought I'll pull this one out and we'll have a little fun with it.
We will talk about it in a little bit. Yeah. We'll also talk about your tips. And I want some more gear talk. I see you've brought a very silly device with you and a couple of cases. But
we got some good stuff here.
Hold on, because I want to do a commercial.
Yeah.
When we come back, Derek Story, thedigitalstory.com. And, of course, our show today brought to you by Ford. Ford's actually a great vehicle for photographers. That Ford Edge is like kind of the perfect SUV for photographers. Lots of capacity. And then, like all of Ford's vehicles these days, very high-tech inside. Used to be... I think it was Walt Mossberg that said this. You'd get in the car and you'd go back 3 or 4 decades to a pre-digital era because it just, you know, you'd leave it behind. You've got the radio, you got a tape deck or a CD player, and that's about it. Not anymore, not in the Ford vehicles. The Ford vehicles combine amazing technology to keep you in touch with the world without compromising your safety. A good example is the Sync app. Like that, you've heard me talk about Ford Sync. I have it in my Mustang. I love it. You talk to the car. It's just like Siri for a car. You could set the cabin temperature. I could say, play a song. I could say to my car, what's the traffic like ahead? Where's the nearest gas station? All of this I do without taking my hands off the wheel or the eyes off the road. And now with AppLink, you can have control your smartphone, too. They've got an API for smartphone apps. The first 3 apps are already out. Pandora, Stitcher, and something called OpenBeak. Now, you know, we all know Pandora, the radio station. So you can actually press the button, just like he's doing on the wheel, and say... play my classic rock station, and it plays off Pandora. If it's on your phone, now it works with most phones. It has to be a recent model Android, I think 2.1 or later, or iOS, all the iPhones it works with. Stitcher, same thing. Play Twit Photo, and it'll play Twit Photo from the phone, streaming it over 3G. It'll even read your tweets or your replies to you through OpenBeak. I mean, that is very slick. But if you visit the website, ford.com/technology, or, of course, go to your Ford dealer. You can take a look at this. AppLink is available in the 2012 Ford Fiesta and many other new Ford vehicles. You just really want to check that out. And let's remind everybody that we're having a barbecue. All right, let me go to Twit Barbecues here. Actually, if you go to twit.tv, you'll see the banner ad there. We're going to ask you to sign up for this because the room is limited. But November 14th, or is it? No, I'm sorry. It's the 13th. November 13th and December 4th, we are having barbecues right out front. And you can be part of the barbecue. You can watch. There it is. See the link there? Right there. Right there. Yeah, there it is. Click that link. It'll take you to twitbarbecues.com. And you got to go there and click the day that you would like to be there, whether it's Sunday, November 13th or Sunday, December 4th. You'll be able to come watch us produce Twit and our new game show, Game On with Veronica Belmont and Brian Brushwood. You'll be able to meet us, Brian, Veronica, me, and our Twit hosts for that day. See some of the new Ford vehicles, get to drive them, see the studio, and even have some good food, too. Absolutely free, but tickets are limited, so we invite you to go right now to twit.tv and sign up for the day you can go. And we'd love to see you here, and we thank Ford so much for putting this together. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Oh, that sounds like a blast.
Isn't that fun?
Oh, my
you
gosh.
You don't have to apply.
Cars and barbecue.
I know. We got the permit from the city of Petaluma, so we can block off the street here so we have somewhere for the vehicles to go. You can't drive the vehicles. You can look at the vehicles.
Right. Well, you know, the barbecue sauce on the steering wheel is not going to work. that's no good.
Hey, as long as we're mentioning things, don't forget our Twit Photo Guest Quest continues. A search for the hottest emerging photographer. We're so grateful to Catherine for putting this together. We're going to find somebody to be a guest on an upcoming Twit Photo show. So that means you and your photographs will really be exposed to some great people. And we have, listen to the five judges we have. These are all former previous guests on the show. Art Wolf, Zach Arias, Colby Brown, Frank Dorhoff, and Tamara Lackey. I mean, these are some of the, and of course, Catherine Hall, some of the best photographers in the world. And we'll get you on the show sometime in the next few months. And, of course, you'll be featured on Catherine's blog. 2 honorable mentions, including a selection of their work, will be featured in an article on Catherine's site, catherinehall.net. and on her Twitter and so forth. So you've got till November 22nd at midnight to apply. But the details are all here at Catherine's website. So go to catherinehall.net and click through to the Twit Photo Guest Quest entry there. If you're a professional photographer, a serious photographer, or just an amateur who loves photography and is really great, we'd love to interview you, talk to you about your technique, your photos, and show them on the air. There's all the official rules that go on and on and on. The main one the lawyers really wanted me to emphasize is this isn't legal in some countries or something. So void where prohibited.
Void where the magic phrase.
You know what they wanted me to do is say U.S. only, and I said, no, won't do it. Not going to do it. We have too many viewers all over the world, and I don't want to leave you out. So it is void where prohibited. You be the judge. Okay? Void where prohibited. And prohibited where void. Derek Story is our guest, the digital story. Tell me about the podcast. What do you do in the podcast?
I have done 200 and... Oh, scroll down just a bit. I'll tell you exactly. I just did number 298 today.
Holy cow.
298.
You got a way to go to catch up.
Yeah. Yeah,
298 is called Five Ways to Become Notorious. I love that. Half an hour, so it's easy to listen to. You can subscribe in iTunes. But you also have an app, a TDS iPhone.
I have a TDS app for...
you know, listening. By the way, TDS, not a good combination.
No.
It stands for the digital story.
Yes, yeah. TDS.
It's nothing tedious about TDS.
You have to enunciate.
It's like talking to Siri.
Yeah, you do. It is like talking to Siri.
Yeah.
Yeah, and this is the app. And the app just kind of brings everything together, the
nice.
Twitter feed and the site and all that stuff. And you can get the app easy on the... iTunes store. But the podcast itself is basically 30 minutes every Tuesday about photography.
Well, so you're going to do another one today?
It just went up. Oh, yeah. I had to get it. Oh, there would be clanging on the door and stuff.
I know. Don't be late with a podcast.
No, you have to be on time
People
with the podcast. You have to find a way to get it done.
So every single photographer we've had on this show is like you. They've got workshops. They've got books. Mm-hmm. They've got... I can't believe how many of them have apps.
Mm-hmm.
They've got websites. I think photographers are perhaps the forefront of using the internet, using social media, now using apps. Why is that? Is it because that's the only way you can make a living in photography?
Yes.
Is that it, really?
No, we have to.
You have to.
Because in all honesty, and I mean, this is a lot of what I teach. At Photo Plus, it was developing multiple revenue streams for your photography business. That was the workshop I taught there. We have to do this in order to be able to continue to do what we love. And so a lot of photographers, they might not like some of the revenue streams that they have to deal with, but it is a way of life. My personal feeling is, the minute you get something that you like better, get rid of the one you don't like as much.
Do what you love.
Do what you love. You know,
but there's always something you can do. If it's writing, if it's podcast, a lot of photographers love to teach. You love to teach.
I love teaching. I actually think for many years I thought I was a photographer and a writer, and I discovered that I was really a teacher mm-hmm. who loved photography and writing.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, yeah. And it took a while for me to get to that point.
Yeah.
But I would say teaching is probably my core skill. The writing and photography really support it.
Who do you like to teach? Beginners or advanced users? Or
I like intermediate. I love the people that are ready to go to the next step.
Right.
I'm okay with beginners. Beginners are fun because it's like, you know, the same sort of joy you get when you teach a kid something. You know, this is wonderful. They just light up, you know, and they're so excited. But the intermediates that have skill, that where they come back a week later and you go, oh my gosh, that is beautiful.
Yeah.
You know, that is fantastic. That I think that's the most rewarding.
Is there a particular thing that most people do wrong that if they could just do that right, they would suddenly blossom as photographers?
Well, I think the first step is to discover where your strength is, because photography is one of those things that requires both sides of the brain. You have the technical side, where you have to think about light and math and all that sort of stuff, and then the purely creative side. Two different sides of the brain. Now, most people are stronger on one side or the other. So the first thing that you got to get to is, where is your strength? Are you a creative person that's technically challenged, or are you a technical person that really needs to figure out how to open up your vision? And then you go from there. And
so work on your weakness, really, is what you're
going to
do.
You really need to work on your weakness. And so what I try to do early on is just sort of identify where people's strengths are, and then we go from there. Most people that I work with these days need more help in the technical side than the creative side. And that's, to me,
I would have thought it was the other way around.
No, that's easy. No, they have a great eye for composition. They have a good feel for things. Maybe it's just who I attract as a teacher.
It's good news, because I think it's a lot harder to teach the artistic side than it is to teach the technical
side.
It
is. I agree.
If you don't have an eye.
I agree.
If you can't see why something is a good picture versus a bad picture.
Yes.
I don't know how you would learn. Can you learn that?
You can learn. You may never be as naturally talented as someone who has that gift, but you can be darn good.
How would you do that?
You can be darn good. It's practice seeing.
Looking at images?
No, I think
taking images.
Both. When I mentioned earlier I was a design minor, and when I was learning to draw, I had a breakthrough where my drawing wasn't up to this. To the level that I wanted, and I learned that my problem wasn't drawing, it was seeing. And I had to learn how to actually go into that place to actually see something, see the details and see the perspective. Once I could actually see it, then I could get it down on paper. And there's a little wall sometimes that you have to break through there, and you're not used to doing it, and you don't have someone pushing you to really see the world or to see your subject.
Right. Do you have any tricks like closing one eye? I've heard so many tricks. Squinting. Bruce Dale told me you squint like that, close one eye. I do notice, I have seen one thing that I think of Trey Ratcliffe. Some of my favorite photographers only use one eye.
Really?
Yeah, they have some, because they don't have depth perception, they see the world, they have all their life seen the world as a little bit more of a 2D, so that's easier for them to make images. I don't know if that's the case. The reason I say that is because I only use one eye at a time. Both eyes work, but I only use one at a time.
I think it's funny, because I actually do just the opposite, and I think it's probably because I came up through photojournalism, but I have one eye through the viewfinder and the other eye open, because I want to see what's about to come into the frame.
I've been told that again and again. Pay attention.
Is that
rangefinder cameras are great for that,
because
you're directly, instead of you're connected to the scene and you see more of the scene than you're shooting.
Yes, and you can anticipate. So you can see something that may come into the scene. So I like to keep both eyes open when I'm shooting.
You mentioned that you use a 5D, but you mentioned that you keep a pocket camera with you. What besides the iPhone?
Mm-hmm.
Which is actually a pretty good pocket camera. This new 4S.
It's a wonderful camera.
Let's do a little gear time.
Want to play with?
You brought a couple of low pro cases jammed with stuff.
Yeah, I got stuff. So
we know the low pro. That's the slingshot, right?
No. This is new. I don't know where's the camera.
I don't know if we have a tight shot of that.
No, this is brand new. This is the DSLR Video Fast Pack.
What does that
mean? It just rolls right off the tongue.
Well, it's kind of like the slingshot, because you have a quick access to
It is like a slingshot this way. And you take off the safety strap, you can get in here and you can. So it's slingshot-esque in that sense. But the thing that I sort of like about it is that you have two shoulder straps.
Yeah.
So
slingshot is like a messenger bag.
Yes.
So you can swing it around like that real quickly.
Exactly.
But you can't carry as much in it. This one you can carry more.
Yeah. This one, and this is the smaller of the three.
Right.
And so in here, wait. Oh, I want to show.
Where's your point and shoot? There it is.
No, I want to show you this camera. This one. It's kind of fun.
That's an Olympus.
This is the Pen Mini.
I know the EP1 and the EP2 and the EP3. What is this?
This is the EPM1.
Okay.
This is brand new. Look at it.
Is it a Micro Four Thirds?
It's Micro Four Thirds.
So that's a Micro Four Thirds lens, and that's one of the things I like about these. They're mirrorless, but you can remove the lenses. So they have different lenses, different focal lengths. I like the 17mm pancake lens.
That's what that is, yes.
But they also have zoom lenses if you want.
Oh, yeah, they have all this stuff. I like the 17mm, too, because on Micro Four Thirds, you just multiply by two. So if it's a 17...
So that's really 34.
It's a 34 f/2.8.
34mm.
Great little street camera.
Small. Yeah. I saw Dvorak carries the EP3, the newest pen, and it's so fast.
It's
never seen a faster focusing.
Yeah.
And so it would be a great street camera.
It is.
Because compact, fast, and it doesn't look like an imposing SLR. And yet you have a lot of the features of an SLR.
Well, and the same thing with the Mini. You get a cheaper price, I think $499 for the whole kit.
That's why I didn't buy the PEP3.
Yeah.
It was $800.
Yeah, it's $499 with the kit. And you get 5 frames per second. And you get the fast focusing.
Oh,
and all the good. And
you know what I fell for?
Put the 17 on there, yeah.
Yeah, I have the 17 already because I had the EP1, which I really like.
The 17's a great lens.
It's a great lens.
Yeah.
I foolishly bought the Fujifilm X100. That's kind of a nutty camera. I fell in love with how it looks.
Woof.
It reminds me of your Argus.
You and a lot of people fell in love with it. There is a real following for that camera. It's interesting. It's
not interchangeable lenses.
Right. And it's a love-hate relationship for a lot of people.
It's an APS-C, so it's a big frame.
Oh, yeah.
But it's funky, and the controls are bizarre.
Yeah. They did a firmware update.
I know. I have to get the new update.
Yeah, you got to do the firmware update for that. Now, while you're speaking of that, they also have the X10 coming out pretty soon.
And that's exciting. That might be a better version.
I'm sort of tempted by that thing. I have to tell you.
This is why you have to do the social media, the classes, the website, because you got to buy this stuff.
You have to buy this stuff. You do have to buy
this. So you like this?
I like that one. I like that. I shoot a lot with that.
I only need the body because I have all the lenses from the EP1. So.
Yeah. Well, except the kit lens that comes with it, was it 14-42? It's like the third generation of that lens.
I have the original 14-42.
Yeah, no. So this one's much better. It's much quieter. It's faster. All that good stuff.
Yeah, that was one limitations of focus speed was slow and and noisy. You could hear it going. In fact, you couldn't shoot video because it was making so much noise.
So this is my mid-sized camera.
Nice. That's not your smallest camera?
No. I still like the S. I have the S90 still. I think I have it with me.
Yeah, the S100. They've came up with the S95 and now the S100.
Yeah, I'm still shooting with the S90.
But it's a great camera.
Oh,
for
man.
Video. Do you shoot a lot of video?
I do. You know, my deliverable now for assignment work, about 30% of my deliverable is video now.
Is that?
It has really changed a lot. And we're talking 2 to 4 minutes.
Is that for photojournalism? Who is that for?
Yes. And clients.
Clients too?
Yes. Well, Photo Plus, perfect example. So I'm there. I'm working for LowPro at Photo Plus. They want stuff up on the web every day of what happened, what they were doing.
They want video.
They want video and they want stills both.
Well, let's talk a little. First of all, this is a great camera for post video.
Yeah, so this is my small camera.
Yeah.
So it goes iPhone 4S, S90, probably the Pen Mini, and then we get into DSLRs.
Don't you get confused with all that different stuff?
Oh, I love it. You know the way I look at it? It's like paintbrushes.
An artist will have 100 paintbrushes.
They would. And, and I'm working on that with the cameras.
So before we get your tips, we've got some great tips. And we have some more gear.
Mm-hmm.
But you brought up something I think we should probably mention. We never talk about video. Do you have any tips for a still photographer who wants to shoot good video?
I do. Boy, do I ever. One thing that photographers are notoriously not good at when it comes to making the transition to video is the audio side of the video. And that's tough. And that'll really shoot you in the foot early on.
Well, they've never had to consider it before.
They've never had to. Yeah. So I would say one of the first things that I would say is learn audio also at the same time. It's going to be a new skill for a lot of people. I was podcasting for years, and there are still things I'm learning on the audio side of things.
Do you get an external mic for your camera? Is that how you do it? How do you?
It's funny. There's a lot of parallels in audio to photography. The mics are like the lenses.
They are.
So you need, like I have a short shotgun mic. I have the Rode Video Mic Pro.
I use that too on my Canon 5D.
Yeah, that's a very nice.
It fits in the hot shoe, plugs into the mini jack on the Canon 5D, and you get surprisingly good audio. I mean, it's not right up in the people's faces, but it's on the camera.
It's on it, but it has a nice tight path, and it works pretty well. I use it quite a bit. And
that's the Rode stereo mic.
It's a Rode
video.
It's a Video Mic Pro. And the thing to remember is get the short one, right? Because there's the older version is the longer one. It's about like this. Get the short one. That's the new version.
That's the one with the furry kitty.
Yeah. And you can get the dead cat.
The dead cat.
You can get a dead cat. And do...
Get the dead cat.
I would say that's another tip. Get the dead cat, whatever you do. Because the minute you're in a breezy situation, you need that dead cat.
It's just
cat.
A big puffball you put on the
end. Yeah. Well, it's so funny because when you walk around.
It does look like a dead cat.
Well, and I think the one I got from it was like calico or something. So you're walking around with this thing hanging on the top of your camera and people are going, buddy, what are you doing?
Oh, boy. All right, let's get your tips. Wait a minute. You got to show me this. This looks like a GorillaPod.
Okay.
But it's got wheels on it.
Yeah, this is from your guy. So Tony and I were talking about this beforehand.
What the heck?
So this is a GorillaPod.
It is a GorillaPod.
Pro.
Oh, okay.
So this is the...
So it's got a real ball head for one thing on it, or did you put that on?
Well, Tony's put... normally the...
This is Tony Wang's?
Yeah, this is Tony's here.
Tony, so, you crack me up.
So normally they come with a ball head X is what Joby makes, which I like a lot. But he's put a Manfrotto on here for some reason. He likes it better. But here's the part that I...
It's got
wheels.
Not just wheels, roller skates, skateboard wheels.
Nice, really nice wheels. And so you can set it down... And
is that a dolly?
He's got them locked so you can do a pano like this.
Oh, my goodness.
And then you can unlock them and you can use it as a dolly for video.
It's a cine skate.
It's a cine. Isn't that cool?
Oh,
Look at these wheels. Let me.
Tony, is this because you've been doing the show or you just got more and more in photography? It's because of the show. Because he has started taking great.
Yeah.
Tony's become the guy who's documenting our studio. He's been taking great pictures. This is wild.
No, I love this. I love this. And so. Tony, I mean, can you buy these, Tony, or is this a hack?
Yeah, you can buy them from...
Cinetex, is that it?
Cineskate?
Is Cinetics.
There it is. Cineskate's camera sliders. Oh, that's a Kickstarter project. They've raised $500,000. Holy cow.
I love this. I had this tripod. This is my favorite of the Jobys. Because this is a nice tripod. It fits nice in my thing here. But these wheels, I mean, I can just see me doing some really nice video with this. You know,
this is
some
the
nice
real problem
stuff.
With photography. Yeah. You can't really ever stop spending money. And
No. And nor should you.
In this Kickstarter, this was a Kickstarter project that they were looking for $20,000. They got $486,000. one of the images they have is using an iPhone on this thing.
Oh, yeah.
As well. If you get the Glyph case, you could just put that right on there.
Yeah, I have the Glyph. I like the Glyph a lot. I like the Glyph. Yeah, this is way cool. So, hey, thanks, Tony. Thanks for sharing.
More good gear.
Yeah, more good gear.
We got time. A couple more things in your case that you want to show off.
Yeah, I do. I do, actually. I want to show a flash here. Let me pull this out.
We had Frank Dorhoff on, so we've had the king of flash on this show. We have covered... Everything you'd ever want to know about Flash, except for this.
this is my new favorite Flash.
Now, this is a speed light? Or what
this is the 320 EX.
Oh, man. I just... So now tell me about this.
Oh, man. Oh, did you just buy a Flash?
Well,
I'm sorry, Leo.
Is this ETTL? Yeah,
this is ETTL, but here's the thing.
Okay, ETTL is what? Electronic through the lens metering.
Yes, which translates to smart.
Okay.
Translates to smart.
It knows what your camera's doing. It talks to your camera.
It does.
Do you have to use a Canon camera for that to work?
For the conversation, you do.
Yeah.
For the conversation, you do. Now, but here's the thing, and I won't point it right at the camera here.
Oh, go ahead.
Look at that. It's got an LED.
What is that?
It's an LED built into it, and it's bright.
What's it used for?
Video.
Oh, so it's a camera light.
It's a camera light. So you have video, or you can use it as a modeling light while you're doing, while you're doing the strobe stuff here.
Oh.
So now you don't have to carry around the LED and the flash. You got both.
Nice. That's the 380 EX.
This is the 320
EX. 320
EX. In addition to that, let me turn it off here so I don't want to blind the camera. It's got it's the wireless. So now with the
built-in wireless
switches on the back, right? None of these LCDs that you can't figure out. Switches for everything.
Good.
And then
nice.
If you're shooting with a new T3i or a 60D or a 7D, it has a wireless controller built into the camera.
So you don't need to go out and buy a remote control. You could even just take this off the camera, hold it out here as you're shooting. And it would work.
Absolutely.
Wow.
All you need, well, look at this. We got that for you.
That goes in the shoe?
Yeah, it's like a little feet.
Oh, this goes on here?
Yeah.
So you don't even have to hold it?
No. Yeah,
you just stand on the table.
It's like happy feet, right? It's like happy feet for your flesh.
That's great. So I put it on the table.
Yeah.
And then now we're going to, and this is what we always want, right, with these shoots is we don't want the light on the top of the camera. We kind of want it.
No,
off the
we
side.
Want it. You want it somewhere else.
Yeah,
you want
to play with the lighting there. Yeah,
yeah. You get a little bit of light, and I think I pulled off.
That is great.
So then now just add.
Now wait a minute. I have to buy this and a 7D. Okay, what else do I need?
Well, or you can get a 60D or a T3i.
I have a 5D, and of course it doesn't work on the 5D.
Well, the Mark III better.
Yeah.
Now, if you want to modify your flash, put a flash bender on there.
There's a little bounce on the back of it.
Yeah. See this? Just put that around or right at the top here. Look at this. See, who says photography isn't fun?
It's all about the toys.
Look at
kids.
That. Look at that. Now
wow.
You got a. So now, not only do you not have a direct light, but you can control. You got a little. You got a little light modifier.
Wow.
Look at that. Doesn't take up any room.
No.
It weighs nothing. Yeah.
And it's cute.
Yeah. It's a whole studio.
Wow.
So I mean, this is the sort of stuff I'm really excited about now. It's a lot of fun. And I think, in all honesty, I think. Off-camera flash is making a comeback. I mean, guys
well, you
like,
know why
like David.
I think the strobist.
David Hobby did it.
Got everybody got it going. Excited about
he
it.
He got it
yep.
going.
Yep.
And but now the manufacturers are giving us tools to make it easy.
This is from expoimaging.com.
Yeah.
If you want to find a flash bender.
This has
a little. You can do this.
Yeah, and they have three different ones,
wow.
And they're really cool, and they go flat in your bag, right?
Sure.
So there's no problem to carry them around at all.
All right, tips.
All right,
number one. Speaking of flash, master your flash. The key to flash photography, says Derek Story, is taking control of it.
Yes, 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 indeed.
So here you have a lovely lady on the beach. Now,
mm-hmm.
We see a lot of these beach shots. Of course, people assume, oh, it's just the sun.
Well, the sun is involved.
But there's lots of other stuff.
There's more, and this is a very simple shot. This was actually a shoot where I just used this flash here. And the camera. And
did you put it on a tripod? Did you have somebody holding it?
I had it. Some of them I had it actually on the camera. Some I had it off with a
little
tripod.
Stand.
Yeah, a little stand sort of thing. But here's the thing that we want to say is that you have to learn where your flash exposure compensation control is.
Oh.
Get out. I know it's a mouthful, but you got to get out your guidebook, because what happens is flash by nature will be too strong and it
right.
doesn't look natural.
That's why we hate flash.
That's
it flattens everything out. It's too bright.
Here, you're not thinking flash here.
I never saw a flash.
No, you're not thinking flash at all. And that's because it's at -1 on your flash exposure compensation.
Now, that's on the camera.
Yes.
You set it for -1. So
yes.
What does it do? It turns the flash down by a stop.
By a stop.
Okay.
Just draws it down a little bit. Either -1, -1.5, somewhere in there. My default, I rarely shoot flash at full power when I'm doing people shots.
This is a fill flash, in
it's
effect.
It's a fill flash.
Yeah.
But you got to draw it down a bit. So the first thing you have to do is learn where your flash exposure compensation is.
All right. I have an assignment for tonight.
Big deal. Yes.
Yeah.
Big deal.
Tip 2, use regular exposure compensation and flash exposure compensation together for mastering your
exposures. This is where it gets good. Let's go back to that shot again.
This is too complicated.
No. It's fun. No,
okay.
This is good stuff.
Oh, okay.
So the flash exposure compensation is going to control what's within flash range right there.
Okay.
You know, like we're within 10 feet.
Right.
But that's not going to have any effect on the environment, right?
The waves, the
right.
sky.
Right. So you may want that background a little lighter. You may want that background a little darker. Guess what? That's where you go to your regular exposure compensation.
That's the little dial in the back, and you go down how much?
Well, it's totally what you want.
Right.
If you want it brighter, you go on the plus, +1,
okay.
+1.5. If you want it darker, you go -1, -1.5. So you use these two scales together, and suddenly you go, man, I've got a lot of control on this scene.
As you twiddle those knobs, you can go from one end to the other.
Yeah.
But they influence each other, don't they? Or no?
There's a little spillover.
But not completely.
It's
almost independently controlling the foreground and the background.
It very much is. And it's one of my favorite techniques. I do it a couple different ways. This is one of the ways that I do it. But I love, when I learned that I could control the subject, the lighting on the subject, and the background independently,
That's cool.
I felt like I was powerful.
That's cool.
Yeah,
yeah.
That's juju there.
That's kind of the next step after controlling the depth of field is controlling the lighting in the background.
Light, color, and focus. Yeah. These are our bread and butter.
Light, color, and focus.
Yes, yes.
There you go. All right, one more. Oh, here's another example.
Yeah, and this is where I did it again. The fill flash on her.
Okay.
But
is it off to the side? Where is it positioned?
Actually, I think I have it on a bracket on that one.
Okay.
Because that was just part of a demo there. Yeah.
You could use a bounce to do this too, yes?
Well, you got to bounce it off something.
The sun has to bounce and then to her.
Yeah. Now, I have my reflectors with me. That's, right. That's another thing. Fill flash sometimes, reflectors most of
same
the time.
Same idea. The reflector would fill light where you
yeah.
want.
Yeah. You just need an extra set of hands on the reflector.
That's the problem with
that's,
that.
That's, you know. Yep. You need minions. Yep. We all need minions.
Just get some yeah. Come here. Hold this.
Hold
stand
this.
There.
You know, a lot of times a mom or whoever comes
sure.
along, you know, suddenly
sure.
I turn them into a grip.
Would you like to be a minion?
Yeah.
And finally, lower your horizon.
Oh, yeah. This is a big
if you have a great sky, lower the horizon for more interesting images. Most of us amateurs just put it right smack dab in the middle.
Well, it's you know, I think it's our quest to feel balanced in life.
Right.
You know, but it really makes the scene more static.
Look at that. That's a good example.
And but you know what? Force yourself to pull that horizon line down, and you know suddenly it's much more dynamic. You get a much better effect, especially if you got something going in the sky.
Yeah, I mean, if we're just a blue sky, it'd still be more interesting mm-hmm. than half and half. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then you know you can go the other way too. You can raise the horizon way up.
Right.
You
get that foreground in there.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. But then you got a little more depth of field issue to deal with there. So you got to know you know what you're doing. But but most of the time, drop that horizon line and. At least try it for a few frames. I predict 9 times out of 10, you're going to like that shot better.
Boy, I think you've given me some great things to work on. Of course, the website is the first place to start for all of this. You can find Derek's books there, his podcast, his workshops. It's thedigitalstory.com.
We got a great workshop season for next year.
What are you going to do?
We have a blast. We're going to do one at Sonoma Coast, which I did this year.
So beautiful. Man.
And we actually get a room there at the Bodega Bay and the conference room, the library.
Oh,
and
fun.
There you just work right in and out. But the photographer.
And then come see us. You could do,
yes.
do the workshop and then you come to the to Brick House and see us.
But we deliver at the workshop. You shoot. You process, and then we do portfolio review on the screen at the end of the day. It's
how
thrilling.
Fun.
It's thrilling. Yeah.
And we always like to get one photo and get the story, the digital story behind this never-before-seen shot
from
Iceland. Everybody who went to Iceland on that Lightroom adventure was singing the praises of that country.
Yes.
The people are great. They're beautiful.
Yes.
It's a beautiful country and a beautiful backdrop of volcanic backdrop.
Well, the steam here is coming from the water. That water, if you stick your hand in there, it's going to come out red.
Wow.
Yeah, it's hot. Wow. So here's a fun thing about this shot. First of all, it was shot at about 10:30 at night.
did the sun ever set?
it did for about an hour. There was still a glow, though. It never really got
amazing?
Dark. So we're doing that shoot. We did the shoot about 10:30 at night, and but it did cool off, you know, a little bit. So that allowed the steam to come up. We had this really wonderful light, and then that's Icelandic wool. That she's wearing there, and we had a wonderful handful of models for this particular shoot, and it was very exciting. The thing was, though, in all honesty, that my girlfriend did not know that I was doing the shoot because it was unplanned. It just sort of like, so suddenly these shots start showing up on the web because
she says,
probably,
"Who are these girls?
Who are these girls?" And what are they wearing underneath? And, of course, my answer was, I have no idea.
Which, I didn't check.
Which was the right answer I learned.
We didn't ask.
Yeah.
We don't know.
Yeah.
But there's Icelandic wool between me and her.
So the tip here is I used a longer lens. This is a 300-millimeter lens for the shot.
Wow. You're way far away.
Because I wanted that, you know, again, I had the vision. I wanted that background to be soft. I wanted it to be sort of dreamy. So I didn't want it to be too sharp. So focused on the eyes with her, with the longer lens, let that background go soft. And then in post, I...
And the telephoto pulls the background in, too, doesn't it?
It does. It'll flatten the scene. Right. That's why it's flattering for some portraits also, because it'll flatten the facial features a little bit, too. Yeah. And a lot of people see that as, you know, flattering.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
Argarg.
No big
you
noses.
Get that. Yeah. Right. And then here's in post, one thing I did, which a lot of people don't use this tool, but I actually use the D-vignette tool, not the vignette tool.
You took the vignettes out.
But I did the D-vignette tool to make the edges even a little bit more dreamlike, a little bit brighter. The D-vignette tool's often used as a correction tool, right?
Right.
You know, when you got the... But it can be used artistically.
A lot of times I'll vignette a photo, it just puts darker corners on it, and it focuses you back into
it does.
Into the thing. But this creates and that's, again, every tool has its appropriate use.
Yes.
This pulls it into a more dreamy state.
I love the vignette tool for focusing, but on this one, I think one of the interesting things about it is I actually use the other one, the D-vignette tool.
I love it.
Yeah.
Again, thedigitalstory.com. Derek, I'm such a fan of yours. You do such great work, and you do such a good job of teaching people how to do great work themselves and bringing them up to that level.
Oh, I appreciate it. You know, I really love what you've done with the place here, Leo.
it looks better than it used to.
This place is looking great.
Thank you, my gosh.
I'm thrilled to be here.
You're just up the road a piece. Come back anytime. We'd love to see you again.
Thank you,
Derek Story.
Awesome.
Catherine Hall will be back next week. Don't forget catherinehall.net to find out more about our Twit Photo guest quest. You might be our next guest on Twit Photo. Tony, who's next actually next week? Do we know? We don't know. We'll find out. But it'll be Catherine back. I'm sure it's on here somewhere, but I just don't know. So I won't belabor the point. This show also brought to you, don't forget, by Netflix. Do you have a favorite? I should start asking photographers this. A lot of photographers, especially as we're moving to more film, have films that they use as inspiration that they love that are works of art in and of themselves. Is there one that comes to mind that you look at for its quality?
It's a quality that I look at.
Yeah.
One?
Think about that.
Really?
Yeah, you don't have to come up with one.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm just saying that you could always go here to netflix.com/twit and get a month free of great streaming movies and find some inspiration yourself. Look, the Guild's on here now. That's great.
I have a number of movies I like, but the one that's jumping out at me, I like what Spielberg did with Schindler's List.
I like looking at that movie.
Yeah.
Well, it's on Netflix.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's on streaming, but it's definitely on Netflix. Netflix.com/twit. Try it free for 30 days. You will love it. If you're already a Netflix member, do me a favor. Tell your friends, because they probably don't know all this great stuff you can watch, including The Road to Bali with Hope and L'Amour. Netflix.com/twit. Thank you, Derek Story. Thank you all for joining us. TNT is up next with your daily dose of tech news. We'll see you next week on Twit Photo. Bye-bye.